This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mudin, and we're answering your questions. You can send questions to radioprogram@AOL.com, and we'll answer them. And the last question that we didn't get a chance to answer, we'll summarize. It's someone who has...
who had an endoscopy, and their doctor said their stomach looked very irritated, thought he had an infection, but that test came back negative. Mm-hmm. This person, however, has severe bloating and pale stools, but no GERD.
Okay.
So what's causing this irritation?
Okay, so what the doctor supposed is, I mean, this is the technical name for inflammation in the stomach, is gastritis. And gastritis is sometimes, but not always, associated with Helicobacter, the bacteria that causes ulcers and gastritis. So the doctor said, oh, I bet you have an infection, but the person doesn't have H. pylori, according to the test, which may have been a breath test or may have been a blood test. Stool tests sometimes are used for determination of H. pylori as well. So here we have gastritis in the absence of an infection. So what are the possible causes? Well, one possible cause is the overuse of nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs or aspirin. So a lot of people are taking that, and that can cause inflammation. Number two...
I want to interject here about the aspirin.
Sure.
So many doctors tell their patients to take their aspirin at night if they're on daily aspirin therapy.
Right.
That makes me want to pull my hair out.
Yeah.
You have to take it with food.
Right.
Otherwise, you can get an ulcer. I don't care if it's enteric coated. You should still take it with food just to be safe.
And by the way, studies show that the enteric coating of aspirin does not really mitigate its stomach irritating effects very much.
Okay.
Yeah, so those are that is a major cause. Another cause, I mean, there is such a thing as a stress ulcer. You know, people are under inordinate stress. You know, people with PTSD or people who are in life-threatening circumstances can develop ulcers. Although the stress connection to ulcers has recently been eclipsed by the infection theory. You know, the infection theory has taken precedence because we've developed powerful drugs that are less and less effective, by the way, at eradicating H. pylori. Now we need, you know, to take longer and longer and stronger, because it's becoming resistant. So, other factors, well, you know, dietary factors. I mean, they're actually foods that have an irritating effect on the stomach.
Right. I mean, our gastritis program includes things like avoiding highly acidic foods. That starts with your beverages like coffee and tea, believe it or not. Chocolate, tomato sauces, anything spicy.
Fried foods,
very fatty foods, greasy foods, things of that nature. Sometimes raw onions and garlic for a time can be problematic until the gastritis is resolved. This person also has severe bloating and pale stools.
Well, this person could have, you know...
This person needs a consult.
This person needs a consult because, you know, pale stools usually connotes a lack of bile, you know, secretion, lack of pancreatic enzymes maybe. Maybe some bacterial overgrowth or dysbiosis, which also can cause, some problems in the stomach.
Yeah. Right. So... All right. Well, thank you very much.
Let's say, I mean, the person probably was put on acid blockers. I mean, I presume, right?
You know. Yeah. Not the way to go.
So the alternative would be DGL, Endofen, which we talk about a lot.
Right,
and folks, if you can't get Endofen at a health food store, it's unlikely you'll find it there. You can get it at drhoffman.com. And what is Endofen, Layla?
Endofen is a powder that's got lots of, it's got EGC.
Mucilaginous things.
Exactly. It's got some apple powder.
Pectin.
Apple fruit powder in it. And it's meant really to help the repair of the endothelium of the stomach.
It is compatible with taking an acid-blocking medication. It will actually help healing because the acid-blocking medication just shuts off the acid, doesn't promote healing.
Yeah.
What kind of results are you getting with Endofen with people?
Wonderful. I mean, even people with intractable GERD, for example, they're very much helped.
We just saw one today in the office, who is really likes it. And then the DGL says it's a miracle for her reflux symptoms. Mistake that people make, and I'll reiterate this, we've said it before, but say it again, is people will take one or two a day. You can really take 6 or 8 or 10 a day, like almost like you would chew gum or suck on a lifesaver, because it continually coats your esophagus and stomach, protects the lining from irritation.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay. Let's see here. We've got a question. In a recent podcast, you expounded on the negative effects of fructose.
Yeah.
How do the different sugars compare to each other? For example, fructose versus sucrose. Well, sucrose is actually a blend of two monosaccharides, fructose and glucose.
Right.
That's table sugar.
Right. So there is fructose in sucrose.
Right. Fructose in and of itself.
So why is fructose, fructose is just fructose, and table sugar is fructose plus sucrose, why is fructose worse than sucrose, or is it?
It can be a bigger promoter of fatty liver.
Right.
It doesn't need insulin.
Right. The way I see it is that it's sort of like gets in under the radar.
Yes.
And is rapidly metabolized to triglycerides and free fatty acids in the body, where it gets either in the blood in the high triglycerides or in the liver is stored as fat.
Right. I was just thinking fructose, the argument for people saying, but I could have honey, it's natural and it's only fructose. But wasn't it found in the mummies of ancient Egyptians that they had atherosclerosis? And didn't they have honey?
The rich ones who could afford embalming, the rich ones who could, the ones who were poor, they couldn't be mummified. But honey is is used as a disinfectant. That's why it's that's why they use it in preserves.
Yes.
And sugar is a disinfectant at a high concentration. It inhibits bacterial growth.
And it's a good exfoliant too. You use it on your skin.
Right. So we recommend honey for mummification, for preserves, fruit preserves. And for topical use, but not for internal use.
Okay. It'd be good for a little while if you have a sore throat in UT. That's perfect.
Soothing, right? Yeah. And there's some actually allergy reducing properties of local honey because it's like taking a homeopathic dose of the local pollen.
Yes.
But local, because who gets local honey these days? Most of the honey is going to, like New Zealand honey isn't going
to
do much for you.
You've got to go to the farmer's market and look for the guy selling honey. Absolutely.
Yeah. Right.
So that's good. You should never feed honey to an infant. There's the risk
botulism.
Right.
Clostridium is present in that.
Right.
So, did we answer the question?
So how do the different sugars compare to each other? Right. There's fructose. Sucrose is a blend of fructose and glucose.
Mm-hmm. What about maltitol? What about that sounds?
Maltitol is a sugar alcohol.
Okay.
It's not really a sugar.
Okay.
But maltose, I believe, is the combination of glucose and glucose. My arty colleagues, please correct me if that's wrong. I'm trying to remember my.
It's a longer chain.
Carbohydrates 101.
It's a chain of sugars a little bit.
Yeah, and lactose is the combination.
That's another sugar.
Of galactose
and glucose, right?
Mm-hmm. And lactose is a sugar found in milk.
Right, milk sugar.
So that is yet another sugar.
Right, and. What else do we got? We got xylitol, which is a sugar alcohol again.
Another sugar alcohol.
Which is not as much metabolized into blood sugar.
That's
and
true.
As inhibits bacterial growth.
Mm-hmm. Very good for dental caries, for gum health. The sugar alcohols, you just want to be careful because most people have a threshold, an upper tolerable limit.
Since it's not absorbed, it runs through you.
It runs through you and you can get the runs.
Right.
Enough said.
Right. So have we pretty much hit on the sugars?
Yeah, but let me just clarify, because they want the difference between fructose and sucrose.
Right.
High fructose corn syrup, which is ubiquitous now in our food supply, that's the one causing more problems than your fructose in your fruit, for example. Mm-hmm. How much fruit will you eat in a day? But you can drink a whole lot of juice. Yes, that's a lot of fructose. So is dried fruit. But really, your juice drinks, your sodas, your soft drinks, all of those containing high fructose corn syrup or any other dessert foods, using that as a sweetener is really problematic. that's when you could really start to have liver problems, starting with fatty liver, high triglycerides, which add to the fatty liver. All right.
Right. Well, you know, the reason we're harping on this is because so much evidence now is that the cause of these degenerative diseases that we see is much more related to sugar than fat. And recently there was actually a scandal that was exposed in the 1960s, the sugar board, or the, you know, there was like, just like the tobacco cartel, there was a sugar board, and they tried to influence, you know, via scientists collaborating with Madison Avenue, they've tried to influence opinion that sugar was okay and that fat was the culprit. So they kind of did a misdirection to the American public, when at the time there was actually a pretty lively controversy as to which was the cause of degenerative disease. And the opinion makers, through literally underwriting scientists to write biased articles, changed the dialogue so that fat was demonized and sugar was exonerated. You know, and now we're coming to see the opposite.
Yeah. And you know, it's not a conspiracy for those who are conspiracy theorists. It's about greed.
Yeah.
More than anything. They wanted to keep sugar going.
It's a matter, it's like good public relations. You know, it's just that's
exactly
the American way, you know.
Exactly.
But there was, and I think these scientists probably were, you know, a little, I could say a little corrupt. I mean, in accepting money to influence the direction their research was taking. But look, scientists are always looking for underwriting of their research. And so they were getting grants.
They were
getting grants from the sugar industry. And the sugar industry was saying, hey, you know, what do you guys think? I said, well, we think that fat's the problem. So the sugar industry said, well, yeah, great. Here's some money. Prove that. And, you know, then they sent the drafts of their research back to the sugar company. The sugar company probably said, hey, this is great, but could you say a little bit more positive about sugar? And the research said, well, okay, sure, fine. You know, we'll exonerate sugar and, you know, keep that grant money coming.
Right. And I could go be an RD at Coca-Cola.
Right. And you know what you would say at Coca-Cola?
I couldn't do it.
No, this is how they justify it. They say, sugar in moderation. Everything in moderation. But, you know, if you eat sugar, you should eat a healthy diet and exercise a ton. And then it's okay. And then their conscience is clear. But what that does is it gives a go signal to people who consume too much.
Exactly.
You know,
I got a similar letter from the RD at Barilla Pasta.
Okay.
A letter that I got in my mailbox saying, this could be a great staple in your diet because in moderation.
You're on a mailing list. You're on a mailing list. Right.
Exactly.
Right.
All of that. So, yeah, there's a way to, sure.
Well, and there are a lot of studies on whole grains.
Yes.
But some of them are sponsored by, in fact, there was a big study on pasta makes you lose weight.
Yeah.
And then you look at the end of the study, and in fine print it says it was sponsored by the Barilla Pasta Company.
Yeah.
The world's biggest makers of pasta internationally.
Exactly.
You know.
So, alright.
I mean, you can lose weight on pasta.
Sure.
If you
eat this much of it and you eat less calories,
right,
and you're not insulin resistant, and you exercise, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know, you can eat less pasta than you were, and you're still losing weight on pasta.
But then to publish an article which gets translated in the journalistic world to eat pasta, lose weight.
Right.
That's
like the melatonin and bone fracture.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So that's what we're left with. Sensational headlines.
Right.
Unfortunately. All right. Let's see here. We've got another question. No names today on these emails. Very interesting. On your podcast, you encourage the ingestion of more nuts for better health. Are there any nuts that are not recommended? How do raw nuts compare to roasted nuts?
Are seeds
considered healthy?
I would not recommend beer nuts. You know what beer nuts are?
No.
They're like sugar-coated peanuts.
Oh, okay. I wouldn't go for honey roasted peanuts either.
That's what it is.
Is that what that is?
Yeah, right.
Beer nuts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, honey roasted.
Something like corn nuts, but is there?
Well, corn nuts. Yeah, there are corn nuts. Okay. I love corn nuts.
Corn nuts. Okay.
But I don't eat them anymore because they're grain. They're grain, so I'm not eating grains on my paleo diet.
Right.
But they're really delicious. And in fact, corn nuts are really not nuts.
They're not.
They're a grain,
mm-hmm.
and they taste delicious, and the tendency is to overeat them, and, you know, mm-hmm. they're caloric.
But all nuts are good.
Yeah.
You can, okay, for those...
All nuts are health, have a lot of health properties.
All nuts are healthy. You can eat them raw, you can eat them roasted. Those of you who are eating raw nuts, if you have GERD or constipation, it can make the problems worse.
But raw nuts also have some
They have trypsin inhibitors.
Right, which prevent digestion.
Exactly. And that's why you can get GERD from that. You can get constipation. It could slow down your bowel. So...
Okay, so here's one. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to tell me. You're a nutritionist. I'm going to pose this to you.
Mm-hmm.
Do cashews actually contain something, raw cashews contain something to make you schizophrenic? I've heard that. Is that an urban legend?
I don't know. I've not heard that, but I've heard cashews are classified as a fruit.
Okay.
Nutmeg, I've heard, might have something to do with schizophrenia or as a hallucinogenic, but don't quote me on that.
What about soy nuts?
Soy nuts, I haven't heard much about.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of
they're
psychosis?
Beneficial effects are not beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much on cashews. Cashew seed extract, an effective anti-diabetic.
People like cashews because they're sweet.
Right.
I use them
as dessert now.
Yeah, they could be a dessert.
But absolutely. I have roasted cashews. They are caloric, so mm-hmm. that's a downside.
You have to take them in smaller doses than you think.
Right.
The almond board has a very nice ad. It's 1, 2, 3.
Mm-hmm.
1 ounce equals 23 almonds. Very easy to remember.
Okay.
So if you ever need a visual for how many nuts you're eating and you're mm-hmm. afraid you're going bigger than an ounce, count out 23 medium-sized almonds.
You shouldn't have more than an ounce?
2 ounces for most people.
Mm-hmm. I could easily do 46
we
almonds.
We could easily eat the whole canister if we let ourselves,
right.
You know? It replaces the chips.
What I notice is that, say you're on a healthy diet, but, you know, you're on such a healthy diet that, you know, you're hungry all the time and you use nuts, it pushes out some of the other healthier foods.
That's true.
So.
And they wind up taking in way too many calories. And this is when people plateau,
mm-hmm.
especially on a low carb diet, because they count on nuts as a snack.
But nuts have heart healthy effects, anti-diabetic effects.
That's true.
They have a lot of good properties.
That's true.
Let's not forget seeds, pumpkin seeds, sunflower seeds. I do sunflower seed butter,
mm-hmm.
As a substitute for peanut butter.
I love eating sunflower seeds just out of the shell.
Mm-hmm.
Pumpkin seeds as well.
Right.
This would be our snack in front of the TV.
Pistachios.
Pistachio nuts are great.
In the shell to slow you down.
Yeah. Now, don't get commercial roasted nuts because often the major brands that I'm talking mm-hmm. about will use cottonseed oil, peanut oil, really crappy oils.
Right. You have to look at the ingredients because it should be just nuts.
Exactly.
It should not be nuts with an oil, you know, that's like soy oil or cottonseed oil.
And you could roast your nuts on a dry skillet over medium heat.
I do that sometimes.
Yeah. The same way you would toast up some pine
nuts
or pesto or something.
It's nice aromatherapy.
Yeah.
It's nice aromatherapy for the house. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So these are all
good. Nuts and seeds are wonderful.
Macadamia nuts. They're high in saturated fat. What about them?
They're so good. No, and saturated fats are just fine.
Thank you.
Macadamia nuts are nice and buttery.
Right.
And 10 of them will hold you.
Okay. Before we sign up, I'll tell you something. Here's a chocolate pudding substitute, okay, mm-hmm. that I have concocted. It's a little rich and, you know, it's not designed to help you lose weight. But I take macadamia butter, which, by the way, is expensive. And I mix in, you don't need much. You just need about a tablespoon of it. And I mix in cocoa powder. And I actually will sweeten that sometimes with what's called coconut nectar, which is actually tastes sweet, but it's got very few carbohydrate calories.
Mm-hmm.
Mash it together. And it's really rich. There's no sugar added, but that gives me my chocolate fix. With a little bit of more oil because the cocoa powder is dry, and it makes it sort of like a thick. I mean, it's sort of like eating peanut butter from the jar, eating fudge from the jar.
Sure.
It's like fudge. It's like my fudge.
That's yeah. great.
Macadamia fudge. I think we have time for one
Sounds
more question.
Great. Okay. We've got a question.
Forget the questions. It's all about the digressions
Honestly,
on this,
I know,
this podcast,
really,
right?
Really.
But people aren't tuning out. You know, we had 160,000 downloads last month, so that's pretty good.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah.
So this person has had bad bloating, pale stools, and weight gain for 7 years.
Weight gain?
I've had almost every conceivable test and tried all diet modifications. One thing I've noticed is that when I went on Flagyl, my stools were normal, darker color.
Oh, that's the clue. I was going to say, there's some form of dysbiosis going on. This is a bacterial overgrowth situation.
Because when they stopped the Flagyl, it went back to
And we know that the composition of the flora influences the caloric disposition of the food.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, in gastric bypass surgery, the theory originally was that there's less absorptive surface, so
yeah.
you're certainly going to lose weight, or your stomach is smaller and you'll reach earlier satiety. But they believe that some of the effects are just, it changes the flora. When you change the structure of the gastrointestinal tract, it alters your microbiome, alters the bacteria. And that may be why people lose dramatic amounts of weight with that. So this is a dysbiosis situation, I think. If we were to see this person, we might do, stool tests or H2 breath test to see if there's dysbiosis.
Right.
That's the problem. But, you know, I'm a little skeptical sometimes when people say they've tried every diet. You know, I'm not sure. You know, usually we find that they haven't.
Yes, that's true. Or they got their diet off the internet.
Yeah. So there may be a diet. You know, so what we would do is we would do diet to suppress the growth of bacteria, maybe use the specific carbohydrate diet or the FODMAP diet.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would, maybe use medication or, you know, Flagyl I'm not that crazy about. I mean, it demonstrated that it was helpful, but I would probably use botanicals.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of products we like, Candibactin AR, Candibactin BR, which suppress the growth of candida and bacteria gently in a, you know, way that's not going to create resistance. You know, these drugs only work so many times. And then, probiotics, using the right kind of probiotics to reestablish balance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But
eliminating the foods that feed the bad bacteria, that's
right.
another thing. But yeah, this is very telling. Flagyl, they got better.
Mm-hmm.
And once the Flagyl...
Well, that was the clue.
Was
that was the clue. I mean, I was going to say, this sounds like a dysbiosis because of the color and consistency of the stools.
Yeah. Interesting.
But it's kind of like another day in the office for us. That's what we see.
Yeah, you need a consult.
Yeah. Okay.
All
so
right.
That's all the time that we have for today. Remember, this podcast is free, and we're happy to provide this service to you. We enjoy it, and we hope that you find it useful. We would urge you to help support and subsidize the ongoing broadcast of this information via your patronage of the Hoffman Center store. Go to drhoffman.com or hoffmancenter.com, click on the store, and select your supplements from the wide array of products that we have available there, and you'll thereby ensure better health as well as better continuity of health information.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Layla. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast for today.